Hey, thanks for listening to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Before we get too deep into this thing, I want to thank the folks at Racetech, racetech.com, authorized service centers all across America, privateer proven, gold valves. They got suspension parts as well. Get your right spring rate done. Get a revalve. Get a oil change. Get motor work done. All of it. Racetech.com. They've been in business since, dude, the early 80s or something. And the best part is if you tell them you listen to Pulp MX, the guys at Racetech and Racetech.com will give you a discount. That's right. It's that easy. Get some motor work done. Get suspension work done. Anything like that. Racetech.com. The home for suspension. All right. On to the show.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast, Paula MX review. The outdoors are here. Round one is done and dusted, and there's lots to talk about. I got some broadcast complaints as well, so I got the two perfect guys to lodge those with. Thank you for watching and listening. Appreciate it. And thank you to the folks at Fly Racing, of course, home of Cooper Webb, RJ Hampshire with it. We got to get into that. He's wearing Fly Racing gear. Chance Hymus, many others. The code PULPAMEX saves you with flyracing.com. So whether it's the Formula helmet, whether it's the Evo gear that I wore this weekend at the Friday Amateur Day, where I took my YZ450F to 10-10 finishes, any of that, flyracing.com. Please check them out. Use the code to save. Great stuff. BOA closure system on a few different lines of gear, and the kinetic mesh is amazing, and it's getting hot, and the kinetic mesh is the coolest, lightest weight gear out there. And don't forget Andrew Short. He loves Fly Racing, and we love Andrew Short. Thank you to everybody for watching and listening. Renthal, motorsport.com. We'll tell you more about them later on. Brunt Boots as well. But let's get right into it. Lots to talk about, and whether or not we're going to see another perfect season or not, I think is where we got to start off the top. First up, the voice of the broadcast team this weekend with James Stewart. He's in the trailer. I ran into some super fans that said they couldn't find him. The Jason Wygant. What's up, Weech?
Yeah. What? Steve, you know what? I took lots of time out this weekend to have lots of conversations with lots of random people. To think that I was hiding is just an egregious fake news from your part.
Well, okay, hold on. When you say took lots, you came to the press tent for about 10 minutes. Is that what you define as
of
time?
I thought you meant random fans. You're saying...
No, I meant random fans. No, but I'm saying when you said you took lots of time to talk to lots of people, I got 10 minutes. But hold on.
Is that your definition
of lots of time?
Hold on. In Weege's defense, this was probably the busiest Saturday we've ever had as far as rehearsal, pre-show, race day live show. There was a lot. I know it's the least amount of free time I've ever had, so there's no way that wasn't the case for Weech.
That's fine, but I ran into some fans. Like, I didn't say you were hiding. I just said I ran into fans that were like, we've been looking for Wygant. And I'm like, he's in that trailer, in that compound, and you'll see him. And they're like, we hope we see him. And I'm like, good luck.
I mean, one of my great friends gave me the advice that I have to stop talking to people and get out of these conversations. A friend that I believe in and count on, and now the same friend is criticizing me.
Not criticizing you. I just said I ran into super fans that said they couldn't find you, and they've been looking for you. That's all. It's not a criticizing. You were working. I'm just making a comment.
Introduce JT so then I can engage with him in this conversation, please.
Speaking of Fly Racing, flyracing.com, the man did not secure an interview with Lars Lindstrom this weekend, but did a good job nevertheless. The Jason Thomas.
Hey guys, do you think that the fans tire of you two arguing all the time on this show? Just right off the top, watching you two, I wonder that if people are just like, I can't handle the bickering of these two, like an old married couple.
JT, how ridiculous is it that I did go to the press tent? And it is true. I probably only had an hour and a half total of unscheduled time to do stuff. And I took, out of the 90 minutes, I took 10 of them to go to the press tent and talk to Stephen Lewis. And yet, JT, I'm still getting criticized because I guess it's still not enough. It's not enough.
Yeah, I think from about 9:10 on Saturday morning until 5:30 p.m., I'm going to guess I had 45 minutes. That's it. Like, and that's nobody's fault. We just had a very packed show this weekend. So I'm on Team Weej on this one. A normal one, yes, Steve, we've talked about this. He doesn't come around. He's a little aloof. This weekend, he's off the hook.
I only visited two people. One group was Steve and Lewis, and the other one was Hunter and Jet Lawrence. Those are the only people I made time for, okay?
I don't know, man. These fans are probably still there outside the TV compound looking for you, but...
Why I said a little aloof, Steve.
Okay.
You heard the four he named?
Yeah.
That's a little aloof.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Okay, lots to get into. Where do I and when do I lodge my broadcast complaints?
Now. Let's get them over with.
Okay. All right. First one. Very nice. I love the fact that, you know, Davey and MX Sports side of things, they really make sure that the history of the sport gets told in most of the broadcasts each week in motocross. I like it. The former winners or history of the tracks or whatever. And this week was JMB, Jean-Michel Bale, the great Jean-Michel Bale, and a little tribute to him, or, you know, I think it was about foreigners coming to America and succeeding, I believe. And, yeah, there's a picture of Ricky Johnson in the slideshow of photos, and I don't know how you make that mistake. JT doesn't know, but JMB never wore 13. He never.
I don't know. You don't think I know anything about JMB or RJ?
I don't think you wouldn't have known this error.
You're out of your mind.
Would you have known it? Okay. All right. Whatever.
Okay. You go earlier, like Glover and Barnett. Yes. But. Okay.
Think that was a 1991 photo? You don't think JT knows what Rick Johnson looked like in 1991?
It was actually 90. But anyways,
either way, he was 13.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah. All right. So I don't know who's in charge of that, but somehow a picture of RJ got slid into a JMB tribute, and so that's my first broadcast complaint.
I think I have a guess. Correct. First of all, it is amazing how this works. That's cool that you want to compliment Davey and MX Sports. That part of the show with the history, Racer Extra, is 100% just done by our producer, Chris Bond. He writes it, and then after that, he emails Andrew Fredrickson, our guy A-Fred at the magazine, and says, hey, this week I wrote a thing about X. This week I wrote about JMB, Langston, Albie, and Prado. Can you send me some photos of those four guys? So they probably sent a batch of 50 photos. And I'm going to guess that Andrew threw a RJ photo in the here's the batch of JMBs. So that's actually how that probably happened. So it is not a broadcast complaint. You can send it to online at racerxonline.com here.
Okay.
RacerX provided the photos. And somebody saw a JT Racing Honda guy, but it was the wrong one.
Inexcusable. Don't like to see that. But and I pointed it out to Davey.
Oh.
And he honestly... He just looked at the ground and shook his head slowly, because you know that really gets to Davey. That would
you could
do almost anything, but if you told him, hey man, there's a photo of RJ when it's supposed to be JMB, that strikes him close to the heart.
I think so. I don't think there's anything that could have happened on the weekend.
Right.
It would have bothered him more than an old photo being mixed up.
Hey Davey, we had a helicopter crash into the hillside. We don't know the casualties yet. Well, yeah, we got to work on that. Hey Davey, there's a picture of RJ in a JMB tribute. No,
there is nothing more important to him than old photos.
No. Gosh. No. Yep. All right.
And RJ, I just hope that Rick Johnson was at the event and was spared seeing this.
Yeah,
I can tell you how you know he was, because you haven't heard about it yet.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Second broadcast complaint, there was an international entries list put on the TV, and there's one person from England there, and the flag is, I think, Switzerland? Who's the flag guy? Who's in charge of flags? Because the
was
Union
it red
Jack.
And white?
Yes. There was no Union Jack there.
I actually learned this when I was there last year for the Nations. There's a UK flag, the Union Jack, but did you know there is an England flag?
Stop it.
Yeah, that is an, because I kept seeing it. And I'm like, what is this? Or like, that's the England flag. Because you know what? England is like 90% okay. of the UK.
Yeah, yeah. You know, not totally.
Also
right.
whatever, there, Northern yeah, Ireland and Wales.
And then I think where I went to that World Supercross round, that's not UK or something. That's something different. Cardiff. That's something
Wales.
Different.
That's Wales.
Okay, yeah.
Wales is UK, no, isn't it?
I don't know, man. They spell it a different language, and they
part of England.
Okay, so that flag's correct.
It is the flag of England. It'd be like having the Texas flag instead of the United States flag, essentially, for a Texan. But
okay,
I cannot take the broadcast off the hook for that because my friend Tomo, who you know, calls in the Pulp Show, said there are actually three Australians. It said there were two, but Brad West was also racing,
so it
should have said three.
Oh, okay. Third broadcast.
That was the point. I think the point was we had a lot of people from outside the country at this race.
I mean, I feel like we normally do. Was this weirder?
It was more. It was definitely
okay.
more.
Yeah, we always have a lot of foreigners racing each week, I feel like. But
we don't normally have this many. Spain, Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden. I mean, we had a lot.
Castro and Guillaume adding to the pile now.
Yeah.
With Kulas still there.
Prado.
Yep.
Condolences to Bondo. I'm not all the way through the broadcast, kind of in and out of it while I was typing my column, but didn't see much Kulas. So shout out Bondo.
He's got a feature. Don't you worry, buddy.
Okay. All right. Good. Third broadcast
he got
complaint.
Some screen time, and we showed those three guys, I think. No, we showed Patrell. One other privateer and Kulas, like B-roll them in the pits, like getting ready to go out.
Oh, okay.
And as soon as the 42 comes up, which is Kulas this year, Bondo just yells in our headset, yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Third broadcast complaint, JT, fly racing athletes. Casey Cochran was not on the screen. He was doing pretty well. We got to fix that. He's a fly racing guy. We'll get that fixed. And I was always taught, you know, counter the negatives with a positive. So I'm going to end this broadcast complaint box with a positive. I thought JS7 was great. I thought James was more engaged. I'm not all the way through the broadcast, like I said, but I thought he was more engaged than in Supercross, you know, when he's in there with Ricky and he's kind of throwing things in here and there. I thought JS7 had a good one. It was funny. It was entertaining. He was telling us what was going to happen. And JS7,
in my opinion, is at his best when he has time to explain his point. And Supercross, you simply don't have that. Especially with three in the booth, you don't have that.
Yep. What'd you think?
Yeah, I agree. And kind of underrated is when we were done, because we added a pre-race show this weekend, because to bring it back to our guy Bondo, like 2 weeks ago, Bondo's like, this is too good. Can we just start a half hour early so we can talk about Tomac coming back and Prado and Jet and Hunter and Anderson and Sexton and Webb. Can we just add? And everybody's like, yeah, let's do it. We'll just come on the air. So my point is, we started at 12:30 and I think we ended at 5:30 straight through. So I know a lot of racers want to do the job that Stu's doing, but I can tell you from personal experience, very few would stay engaged for six straight hours. But he did, man. He was fired up the whole time. I mean, at no point did he get bored, tired, hungry. A lot of people want to do that job until they actually do it. Six straight hours live is
I think it's
a
five.
Lot.
I think it's five.
Five?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. It's six because we had race day live, but that wasn't straight.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah. We had a break.
And then I guess the last thing about the broadcast-wise before we get into the race here on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast, Paula MX review, the controversy with Jet, obviously, it was totally it seemed like a planted question to have Jet publicly address it at the press conference. And then, Weege, you read a little thing on it. I do want to say that the people that say the media was hiding this to protect Jet, they can suck it because it was out there. Jet got asked about it. And then, Weege, you addressed it. Now, do I think maybe Jet should have been on the TV show broadcasting it from the press conference and not the flunky NBC guy reading it. Sure, I guess. But whatever. The point is, you know, there's a lot of people like to take shots at the media for saying this or that. I've talked about it on my shows. And so, yeah, it was addressed. And I think that, you know, some of the criticism from the online people, I'd like to say, suck it.
Yeah, there was discussion of, you know, how would this be addressed? And because he did address it in the press conference, yeah, I'm with you. That's probably a planted question. It was the very first question.
Yeah.
And it did kind of like address the elephant in the open space room there. So that was good to just at least got to say his part. But yes, then there was discussion of it is now officially out there. Jet has publicly addressed this. So now it must be addressed. And I honestly don't know why they decided to go with a statement that I read and not play the press conference. It might actually be as simple as Jet had a good answer, but it wasn't exactly concise.
Right? Or maybe, yeah, maybe like, it's too long, right? Yep.
It might be like what he said in 90 seconds, we could say in 25 seconds. But I could tell you, like, it's treated like it is in other sports. You know, when something controversial happens, you have to acknowledge, you can't pretend it didn't happen. So that was acknowledgement that it happened. Now it's up to other people if they want to go down rabbit holes and discuss it for hours on end. But I mean, you guys watch like the NFL. When a player does something off the field, they don't pretend it didn't happen.
No, right? Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. They talk. You know, Al Michaels will chime in about the arrest or whatever. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, and it's generally like that. They acknowledge it. They talk about it. They say what happened, and then they get back to covering the game. But they don't pretend that it didn't happen. So I guess this was that, essentially.
Crazy world we're living in, too, when he has to have a security guard as well. Crazy world, man.
Disappointing. That I didn't know. It's odd in all the discussions of the reading the statement, all that. I don't even know if that was related because I never heard about the security thing. I literally just was down in staging for one of the practices, I guess the first practice. And our guy Anton's like, check that out. And I'm like, what? He's like, look at that guy. And I'm like, what? So I don't know what the deal was with that.
I guess he got some threats, which is just the world we live in. Absolutely nutty. All right, let's dive into this. Speaking of Jet, controversy or not, never lost at Paula coming in and still has not lost. That second moto was amazing, and we'll talk about that in a second. But Weege, this strikes me a little bit like Stu's perfect season or even Ricky coming back from an ACL. Where there's a lot of questions. It was a big injury. How would he respond? How would he look? And then he looks damn good. And logically thinking he's just going to get better. He's probably not going to try some stupid downhill triple this weekend. it was incredible. He looked amazing.
I think all three of us said this and agreed with it both on the preview videos we did for Racer X last week, and then you and I discussed it on Moto 60, your show, on Thursday. I think we all agree we knew how exciting this race was going to be and the season should be and how deep it is and the mystery of these guys coming back. But didn't we all agree that you have to carve out some piece, 10%, 8%, 28% of this could just be, hey, Jet Lawrence is just the best guy. And none of that other stuff matters.
Yeah, you were on that. You were on that right away.
I don't think we were predicting that.
Yeah.
But I think you're insane to not think there was a chance that he's just that damn good and this was going to happen.
I won't doubt the guy ever again.
Yeah.
I'm done, right? Like I talked about on the broadcast. I asked him at the press conference. I asked him on the podium because, listen, we've asked the same question. Like, how's he going to be? Is it too early, right? And I feel like I was on the front end of saying, like, you guys are going to regret talking about you don't think he can show up at the opening round. Like, for one, I was dead certain he would be at the opening round back then. My only question was, what is it going to look like? Is it going to be, we got to get some points. If we want to win the championship, we can't give away 50 the way another rider did at the opening round. But because we're simply not ready, like you have to be willing to go out there and get eighth. If eighth is all you have, it's okay. But I'm just done doubting if the guy's going to be ready to win because we time and time again ask questions and he aces any test put in front of him. Whether it's him as like his just genetic makeup and how quickly he can recover and how quickly he can get back to 100%, or it's the team around him. He's got a lot of smart people medically, whether it's the surgeons or the therapist and Doc G. You know, he gave us a little insight as to he was at Doc G's every single day, all day at the therapy, just all day. That's all he was doing. He did the same thing with his thumb. Multiple times a day would he go through these therapy sessions and grueling ones trying to get back. But whatever they're doing, like, I think for our sport, they are the paradigm for how quickly you can come back. What's the forefront of medical recovery? We're seeing it in real time. This kid is redefining what expectations are coming back from injury. Because think about Ricky. You mentioned like how good he was that year. He had 6 months at least of recovery, preparation, riding. Like, I remember seeing him riding in the spring, and I'm like, holy hell.
They did it in, like, November, I think, right? So
No, I saw him riding in, like, March.
No, but I'm saying he did the ACL in November and then got it done, and then, yeah.
Right, so he had a lot more time. This is a whole different thing. Like, Stu did it in 08. That's fair. But, Stu looked like, and I think he would probably tell you the same, he was probably riding at 80%, honestly. Like, when you watch him ride, he wasn't pushing at all. Like, he was just doing just enough. Jet didn't have that option on Saturday. Jet was flat out. Now, could he go possibly faster in a month from now? Maybe. But, like, that wasn't I'm wounded. I don't have everything to give yet. I've got to be careful here. That he was going for it, right? Tomac was pushing him to the limit. It's so uncommon what we're seeing right now, and maybe I don't have the right vocabulary or the right way to describe this, but I just want people to understand that this is not the average injury recovery performance type thing that we're seeing from Jet time and time again. This is a whole different level to that type of thing. So kudos to everybody involved. I'm sure some of it is Jet's just makeup, right? Like, his biology is some of this, which that's just, you know, good for him. Like, look at how the kid's built, right? Like, his neck is this big around. Like, he is just extremely strong kid. Clearly, his metabolism's great. His recovery mechanisms are great. But there's an endless amount of work being put in behind the scenes to get him to this level this quickly also.
But, dude, talking about the recovery from injury, that's only part of the story. It's just also the continuation of how friggin' good he is, healthy or injured. Well, He's still only lost one 450 national in his life.
But to be there again, like, you're talking about, like, the sharpest end of the spear we have in the sport, right? Like, look what they did to Prado, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
To get all the way there this fast. Like, yeah. I'm not saying he's never going to get back, but, like, immediately back to it. Immediately, right away, gets to the front. And, I mean, the first moto didn't look that difficult. Like, Tomac pushed him in the second one, but, like, there's just no delay. Like, we saw you as the best rider in the world before you got hurt last summer, and then you're just knee surgery, and yep, no question about it. You go 2 seconds a lap faster than everybody in the first qualifying session, and you're not touched again for the rest of the day. Like, Tomac pressured him, but it's remarkable. It's remarkable. I think we're going to look back in 10 years and say that kid was a little bit different than what we're used to seeing.
You look at, I think RJ came back quicker. I don't know what, but I think RJ from that mesh ACL might have been back in 3 weeks. Oh, but anyways.
They're talking about the wrist.
It's incredible. And yes, that first qualifying session was literally like I was in the press tent, so just following it on times. And I'm like, oh no, oh no.
I'm not going to argue whether RJ's was quicker. This was the date that Jet needed to be back for. Right? Like, if he needed to be back 2 weeks ago, who's to say he couldn't have? This was just the date he needed to be back for. And also should be mentioned, they had the same procedure, that same new age procedure that I don't know when it was developed, but recently they both used that to get back much quicker.
It was remarkable. And I talked to Darren Lawrence for a while after the race. And man, I'll tell you what, and I think even Darren's always trying to get the bikes better and better where they need to be. They are not where they need to be with these bikes right now. And I was really impressed with ET reeling Jet in. I thought Jet broke him, pulled away to about 3.5. And I'm like, okay, we're good. And then I'm like, oh, no, we're not good. Look at Eli. And then a couple laps to go, Jet finally secured the win. And I was talking to Darren. I said, I'm like, what do you think? And he said, you know what? Honestly, I think that was Jet being like, I got to back it down a little bit. I'm not comfortable on the bike yet. I'm going to back it down. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, I can't. And I got to pick it back up. So even to do that, to, you know, back it down, get into a pace, and then you got, it's 22, 24 minutes in, and this guy's on you, and you got to pick it back up. His time's dropped. Is impressive. All of that is impressive for the first race. The managing of that was impressive.
Yeah, for sure. I want you to talk about the stuff that James was really getting into, the sprint and then relaxed stuff. But just really quickly, there was one line, and we called it out on the broadcast. Eli was just killing Jet. Like, it was like, I don't know, half a second or more every single lap. And I think that kept Eli in the fight for much longer than it probably would have been. Like, if Jet could have figured out that inside after probably the longest straightaway on the racetrack with jumps on it, I think he would have gotten a gap earlier, but Eli would close back in and give him hope every single lap. And then Jet on the podium actually mentioned when he got the four laps to go thing, he's like, okay, I still feel pretty good. I can put in four really good laps here. And that's when he broke him. I think he dropped the hammer there. Like, I think he was like, I just got to do enough. I just got to do enough. And then when, you know, it's like Rocky IV, when the Russian yells from the corner, that four lap signal, he went for it, and then Eli couldn't respond at that point.
Did you guys think that Eli picked up some lines from Jet early in the moto? That's what it seemed like to me watching.
That's the benefit of being behind.
Yeah, I thought Eli was like, I thought it was two or three insides that I saw where Eli was like, oh, I'm going to go there, and then stuck with Jet. But go ahead, Weech. Well,
Vice versa, had Jet been able to be behind Eli and realize Eli was taking that inside, he would have known right away. But that's what's so hard. If you hear Ricky talking Supercross about, I want to be the guy behind, that's one of the reasons. Because you can learn, you can see where you're slow, you can see where you're fast. When you're out front, man, you're in defense mode, you don't really know what's happening, you don't know where to protect, you can't really try a different line because you're scared to get past. Like, it's a very disadvantageous position to be the leader.
As for Stu, I've obviously learned a ton working with him here for 3 years now. And what's really funny about it is I think we just always think that all Stu did was just go wide open, insane speed, and there wasn't much strategy behind any of it. Now that his guard is down, I joke about his statute of limitations is down. He talks all about races where he wasn't confident, where he faked confidence, where he had to make people think that he was better than he was. And I didn't ever think that he did this, but he talks all the time about he'd pick sections of the track where he's like, I don't need to be fast through this section. They can't pass me here. I'm going to rest right here because I just know I got to be fast in the two sections of the track where they could pass me or whatever, and vice versa. Certain times of the race, he's like, I knew if a guy was going to battle me, I'm not going to go insane to hold this 2 second gap. I might as well rest for a lap, let him get to me. And then when he gets to me, I'm fresh enough to get back away again. And that'll frustrate him. And then he's confused. And then he starts, his heart rate goes up because he's like, wait, I was catching him. Why isn't it working? Stu told me that he did all these things that I never thought he did. And now that he's explained that, you can see Jet doing a lot of that. It's not just, I'm going to put 1 second a lap on him for every single lap. And then by the end of the race, I will have 15 seconds in a 15 lap race. It's as long as I grease this section every lap, I don't need to rush the rest. I can stay fresher. I can take less risk. I think it is different, the dynamic of Tomac versus anyone else that we've seen, because we'll get to this, but I think we all fear there might be a mental thing when Sexton's the one behind him, and I don't think that's an issue with Eli. So it was interesting to see Eli playing this game, because Eli might be the only guy on earth that could maybe just beast mode, and there's no level of management that's going to hold him back. But in the end, it was exactly like most of these wins, identical to all the ones at this track, where at the end of the day, you're like, dude, he almost beat him. Tomac was 99.9% as good. But Steve, yeah, you're not out of line to also say maybe there's going to be a perfect season. That seems insane.
No,
he barely beat Tomac. But we saw this happen multiple times already.
Yeah, he's just going to get better and the bike's going to get better. All the Honda guys, none of them are super stoked with what they got going on for a setup with Hunter and Jet.
There was a time, I think it was, I know when it was. It was right before the New Jersey round of Supercross. Panic's too strong of a word. But something approaching panic was the feeling around their setup for the 450. Hunter was really, really not there yet. So they've taken big strides since then. They had big testing sessions, and it didn't really matter at the time. It wasn't relevant to Supercross. So it wasn't like, I wasn't coming out talking about it everywhere, but I heard from people that knew that they were like, hey, we got to figure this thing out. We're running out of time. So I think they're still in that process. They're probably a lot better, but to your point, yeah, it's been a work in progress, which is wild because think about how great and how happy they were with that chassis July of 2024. And now I don't necessarily understand how we get here. Like if they were so happy then, can't you just run what you had then? You know, like, I don't know, but.
I mean, as he explained it on Pulp, he was on your show like a month ago.
Yeah.
Didn't he say that, and this might have been what you're referring to, JT, they had only been doing Supercross, obviously, for a while. And then when Hunter jumped on basically the Donation setup, which was like the last time they raced outdoors on that bike, they were suddenly like, that ain't it. Like everything they learned, because we knew they had this scramble in Supercross and they were getting closer and closer. I think it's when they went back to what they thought was good in October, they realized, oh, this is the wrong direction. And that's where the scramble has come from. I agree, the first last couple nationals last year were great.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
And even the 25 is they ran that bracing in the front, right? In the 24, and it worked great. We all saw that. The 25 has that thickness in the front spars, but it also has thickness in the back, in the shock tower and all back there. And that's really stiff. And so they're fighting with that and they're changing things with the shock. And so there was that too. I mean, there was a little bit of trepidation about Hunter coming in, and because he's not an alien like Jet. There's a little bit of like, he needs a better setup to do well. And I think everyone, so as much as we talk about the Honda guy saying we need to be better and Darren saying we got to be better, we got to figure this bike out, there's also the fact that I think they were really happy with Hunter going 3-4 on the day. They didn't think he could do that. They were not, with the shoulder and the bike, they were not as willing to go there with Hunter, and I think they were really happy with that ride from Hunter. So it's funny, the Lawrence family.
We need to go back to Tomac, but just on Hunter quickly. So on the podium, I knew he wasn't thrilled with the bike after the first moto, because when he came in, he sat down, he's talking to the Honda guys, and he's just going, all it does is this everywhere. And I'm like, okay, they'll go back, they'll make some changes, because once you go for the setting in the first moto, if it's wrong, it's just wrong. Like, you don't have time to, you can't stop. So I kind of wanted to set him up for that. I was like, yeah, we just, you know, maybe I went the wrong direction. We'll adjust. And he's just like, nah, whatever. Like, he's just like, anything I ever like try to steer a conversation towards in an interview, he's typically like not having it at all. So I was just like, I don't know, man, I give up. Like, I literally watched you talking. I don't want to blow you out, because I was like eavesdropping the conversation, but I can't win. I can't win with those questions.
It's I brought it off the top. It's not, it is not too early to talk perfect season. It's not, man. I'm telling you, he's going to get better. Bike's going to get better. I think kid's unreal.
Tomac was too unreal. Good this early. Too good this early. I don't think it's time yet. I don't. I'm not saying
it's time.
But I don't
Weege, see that.
I'm afraid if people are listening to this in their car Monday morning, you're going to crash, because they're going to be so angry at you for seeing Eli Tomac, who's raced two nationals in 3 years, is also coming back from injury. It's also round one for him. He's had way worse round ones and first races than this. People are going to crash their car in anger hearing you say, and I know, we know things. We know that we've had this discussion 100 times. You never know if you're seeing everything Jet has to offer. Just because he didn't beat Tomac by 30 seconds doesn't mean he didn't have more in reserve. But most fans right now are going to say, Steve, also Tomac's coming back from injury. He hasn't raced in 3 years. Why are you saying Jet's going to get better? Wouldn't Tomac also get better?
Well, the bike. I'm looking at the bike.
If Jet torches Eli next week in Hangtown, 100 degrees, it's going to be 95 on Saturday at arguably Eli's best track. I don't know if it is or isn't, but it's up there.
What? Eli's best track?
Hangtown, bro?
It's one of them.
I guess they're all Eli's good tracks.
I mean, you don't think he's good at Hangtown?
He's put in some amazing rides there, but I think crushing people.
He won the first ever race of his career.
I think
he beat everybody, including Ryan Dungey, by a minute and a half. Like, I don't know what you need.
Yeah.
Hangtown is one of his best tracks.
He's beat everybody by a minute and a half at other tracks.
Weege, what do I do?
Steve, you're insane.
It's a good, they're all good tracks. Everyone's a good track. Well, maybe not Paula. He's done okay at Paula. He's won, but he's also not crushed at Paula.
You honestly.
Okay, carry on with your point.
You push back on Hangtown being one of his best tracks.
I think of some other tracks as being better, but go ahead.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
Wow. He's won there a lot.
Back to the point.
He's won everywhere.
If he smokes Jet at Hangtown in the heat, okay, then I think you can. If he goes 1-1 again, then I'll entertain the conversation.
Wait, but you said if he smokes Jet, you mean if Jet smokes Eli?
I'm sorry, yes. If Jet smokes Tomac there in the heat in those conditions, I'll entertain it. Right now, though, Tomac was too good in the opening round for me. No way am I going down that path the way Tomac looked.
Okay, so what do you make of the fourth and the first moto where he kind of was by himself a little bit?
Yeah, all I need is one moto for you to be wrong.
Oh, okay.
I
thought Eli was just so-so in the first moto. Like, I'm like, okay, like fourth is solid. Like,
I mean, we've seen that a million times from Eli. I'm not saying that Eli's better. I'm just saying for him to not find a way to win a moto feels like a stretch for me the way he looked in the second moto.
Jet's good, dude. Holy smokes, Jet's good.
Clearly. Before we get off Eli and Jet, it feels different between those two. And if you remember San Diego and Supercross, how happy they were talking to each other. Like, Jet was the first one to congratulate Eli. I mean the first one there. Like, laughing. That was so much fun. If you saw him this weekend, like, Eli was happy in the second moto. Like, it wasn't this, like, damn it, I got second feeling at all from Eli. Jet was emotional because of other things. But Eli was, like, getting congratulated and smiling. If that's chasing Jet, you don't see any of that. Like, the dynamic is just so different. And it doesn't mean it's better or worse. It just means it's different. And I don't know if it's, like, they have their own respect levels for each other. But I think it's more coming from Jet's side. Like, he respects Eli so much because of what he's watched Eli do. And I think he's looked up to Eli for a long time. Their personal dynamic is simply different than everybody else I watch when they're battling.
Ironic, too, because there was Lawrence Tomac beef at there one was. Time. Yeah, a couple years ago.
I think it just comes down to respect. I do.
Yeah.
Hilariously, if you watch the press conference back, Jet is just so damn goofy. I think he's just been so damn goofy for so long that eventually Eli just cracked and is like, I cannot believe how goofy this kid is. And he just can't stay hating him. At one point, Jet is trying to, I remember watching Eli grow up. I can't believe I'm good enough to race with him. But then he started admitting that he didn't really know much because, and Steve, we've had these convos with Jet. He's not a motocross historian by any means.
Putting away.
And then finally he's like, I remember Eli having some good races, but to be honest, I'm never going to win a contest of dirt bike trivia. Some of my memory is pretty bad. And then eventually, as he's admitting how dumb he is when it comes to, like, past trivia of the sport, Eli just starts laughing. And Eli doesn't want to be seen laughing in the press conference. So he's trying to hold the laughter back, which is making him laugh more. And I think basically, Jet, and we've seen this, we see it before the races, after the race, you wouldn't even think the dude raced that day, right? He's so on cloud, I don't know what planet he's on, bouncing around, goofing around. I went into the truck with him and Stu before the race just to, like, check in. And within three, like, they almost talked about lines in practice, him and Stu. And then next thing I know, he's got his golf bag out and he and Stu are practicing putting in the Honda truck an hour before he has to stage for the moto.
Yeah.
Like, that's how loose he is. So I think that has eventually disarmed Tomac, where he's like, dude, I can't do the mean mugging with this guy. He doesn't even have that gear.
I remember when Jet and Chase were going at it in 23, and Chase was just in agony. In agony over this, right?
Yes.
Well, Jet's like taking pictures of those two, Chase sleeping on airplanes, and like, I heard from people that they were like, look how arrogant he is. He's like making fun. And I'm like, no, he's not. He doesn't even really understand how serious Chase is taking this. And he's just like, yeah, man, it's my teammate and we're racing. And like, it's, you just have to be around Jet enough to realize who he is as a person off the bike. And it's, there's not a lot of like ill will there with this stuff at all.
Yeah. Sexton. Couldn't have gone any worse.
Nope.
I mean, I guess this is the low point. Good news is can't possibly be any worse. From throwing your goggles on lap one to hitting neutral and crashing, that looks like something I would do.
I mean, it really started in the first qualifying session. If you really want to,
He pulled it together for round two. They made some suspension changes, but
the first one, you're 10th.
Yeah,
10th. Like,
yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, yeah, it, absolutely terrible. And then I guess his arm is why he went. He didn't race second moto, right? His arm was sore or something. I think
his shoulder, I think, is what Haley was told.
All right.
But how many crashes have we seen? These aren't even ones during the week that we haven't. How many harder crashes have we seen Sexton get right up from?
A lot.
30?
Oh, yeah. 50? Yeah, no. How do you throw your goggles lap one? I mean, right away, he's got to be going, what? I mean, like, I don't know what happened. Obviously, but the goggle malfunction, goggle something, and you're like, this is how it's starting? Oh, wow. And then the crash that was really dorky and, yeah, just hit neutral. Unbelievable. Like, yep. Not good, man.
The champ, like, for all intents and purposes, the championship feels like it's over. And I'm not the arbiter of that, you know, but it feels like it. Like, how are you going to make up 40 points on Tomac, 50 on Jet, and you're not even healthy right now? Maybe he's okay to race Hangtown. We don't know. But it really feels like dire straits already. We're two motos in.
Let me ask you a question here, JT. Another former professional racer who I was communicating with today is like, dude, we all get dirt in our goggles. You eventually learn how to ride with it. You kind of know what bump it's going to pop up and when to blink. And just, he's like, you ride a moto at Southwick, you can't avoid it. So like, he's like, that seems odd that he pulled the chute that quick.
It definitely happens. You know, long before, now the guys are so good. They'll put Vaseline and do all these things to prevent these things. I didn't have a lot of that for a lot of my career. So yes, dirt was a normal, and it really sucks. Every time you hit a jump, it flies up and then you're like, I can't see. And it drops back down.
Yeah. But did you pull your goggles?
In your goggles? Yeah.
So no. But did you remove your goggles?
No.
Or did you just deal with it?
Yeah. You just deal with it because it really sucks.
That's what this person is saying. He's like, I find that really odd that his move was toss the goggles.
Yeah. It had to be really bad because he's a champion. He knows what he's asking for to pull his goggles off.
I was thinking the strap
he's
broke.
Answer
something.
What exactly was going on, but it had to be like no other option. I can't imagine a world because to this other rider's point, yeah, man, you don't want to do that. Like, you do not want to do that. So it had to be catastrophically bad, whatever was going on with his goggles. Or just a bad decision, or just like, probably shouldn't have done that. Like, out of frustration, he just rips them off. I could see that maybe going that way too, but wasn't the right call, I don't think.
Dude. Nope. He's got an uphill battle for sure. Thank you to the folks at Renthal, by the way, for coming on board. Renthal.com, Factory Honda, Kawasaki, KTM, using Renthal products. The lock-on grip is out, doing very, very well. Check them out, whether it's 7/8 bar that JT used to race with, or like the fat bar and twin wall bar that the guys race with now. Renthal.com for more information on that. Mountain bike parts available in power sports dealers as well. Renthal.com. Thank you to those guys. And of course, Fly Racing. Use code PULPMX. Checking out at Fly Racing to get yourself some cool stuff. So Hunter Lawrence gets third, 3-4. Like I said, good job. I don't think any people had him on his team as doing that well. He got some good starts. The button. Button's I was bugging back. Lars up in the tower about the button. It's back.
Oh my God, is it back?
And you know what this means then, if the button is back, the whole shot challenge is back.
Okay.
Because he said he doesn't want to do it till the whole shots are back.
That bike is fast, man. That bike is
fast. Washougal?
I don't know. Somewhere.
They have some serious, I mean, I've been talking about it for a while, but that bike has some serious torque. Like, Jet's jump, we talked about it before the start of the second moto. Jet and Prado started next to each other, and I was a little worried about Jet, and his jump wasn't great. And that bike, holy crap, man. Like, it has something special when it needs it in the deep stuff.
He made some moves in the first turn, too, Jet did. Because, like you said, I was, like, watching it. I was like, oh, wait. And all of a sudden, I'm like, whoa, where'd that come from? As he came out, like, you know, first or second.
Yeah.
So good job for the Lawrence brothers, and Honda will get better. And, yep, really, really impressive for sure to see that. Aaron Plessinger, fourth, AP. And this is just seems like the post-race pulpcast. He didn't run a paddle tire in Moto One because he said he didn't even think about it. And in typical AP style, he just laughed.
hold on. How do you not think about it? Your teammate Sexton is right.
Yeah.
Your bikes are 5 feet apart.
You heard the interview?
I did a report over there. I interviewed Sexton over there. I was looking at it and I saw it. I talked about it on television.
He said, brother, I didn't really think about it.
On the broadcast.
I didn't really think about it, brother.
Come on.
Is that kind of what it was, Weege?
I think that's probably a direct quote with some laughter thrown in.
Right.
There's no way, though. Like, there's no way, because they ask you, what tire do you want?
I don't know, man. Go listen to the post-race pod. So then he put it on for Moto 2, and he got a great start, and he rode really well from there. So that's AP, everybody.
It's becoming a problem. I know this is going to be a rant on your show, your Race Tech rant.
Yeah.
But it is becoming a problem because some guys love the tire and some guys don't. For sure, the tire has gotten much more versatile. It's not nearly as feast or famine. But if you just, in general, don't like it, I think you're screwed. Because enough guys can get away with it now.
Yeah.
Your starts are screwed. You almost have to do it.
I mean, Tomac ran it at Dallas, everyone. Tomac ran it at Dallas. It's fine. But it did. Weege, you heard the interviews. This is what it turned into with all of these idiot riders.
Yeah, what? Webb and Savacci. Yeah, all of them.
They're all just talking about paddles and no paddles. And here's I don't like the paddle. I love the paddle. It's just, it's phenomenal. I don't know. Yeah.
All the people that get mad at me for talking about that tire on TV a lot, there you go. That's all the confirmation you need. Riders want to talk about it.
AP rode really well, though. Like, I mean, I didn't want to be a dick in the post-race thing, but I'm just like, you know, like, how did they pull away from you so much? You know, like, how does that happen? Like, and he didn't have a great explanation, you know, just like, hey, those guys are, you know, they're great or whatever. And they are, but like,
his explanation was it's Jet Lawrence and Eli Tomac.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, they're great riders.
There is.
But like, because they were gone. Like, see ya.
Yeah.
Rather startling to me, you know, where I was like, oh, boy.
I mean, compare their resumes.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get a lot of the time. Like, I don't think he has to really defend it. Like, it's.
Yeah. Well, I was more like, hey, like, where did you see they were doing or what were you thinking? Like, and it was just like we said, they're great riders. And I'm like, okay, man.
Can we just give Tomac this nod? I've been saying this. He really saved Motocross the Nations last year, because if he doesn't say yes at the last minute, I don't even know if they race. And certainly they're not competitive. That race was so exciting only because of him. If he doesn't go, the whole thing sucks. And then if Eli chooses to retire or not race Motocross this year, think of what this race over the weekend and the rest of the season looks like on the horizon. Thank God he's still out here doing this.
Well, and we're gonna deal with this later. We're already too deep into this, but the Yamaha hate is coming, and we'll deal with this as we go on, because you know it is gonna get bad from fans here. So
not re-signing him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like going to, people are gonna be like, WTF? You know.
Yeah,
so
I think we really need to be on the front end of explaining why and how, because that's not fair. We know it's not fair. But
yeah,
I mean,
I feel like we've done that a few times. But
it really ramps up here, like we need to. I don't even care. I'm not Blue Crew sponsor or anything. I just think logically we need to be on the front end of explaining how we get here and why.
Yeah,
they kind of can't.
We just Blue Crew bought and paid for us, so we'll get into that down the road. Yeah.
Oh, I am.
Justin,
it doesn't matter. We can explain it all we want.
Yeah.
Fans want what they want, and what they want is Eli at his best. And I don't think anyone thinks that he's going to upgrade by going to any other brand. That bike is so good for him. So we can give all the reasons we want. If you're an Eli Tomac fan, and most people are fans of him, they don't want to hear it.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that also want the Cowboys to win a Super Bowl, and that's not happening either. So put that in the same bucket.
They're
Maple Leafs?
They're not responding to logic either.
Maple Leafs?
Oh,
okay.
One guy does.
Justin Cooper, you guys aren't going to believe this. Justin Cooper rode great in the first moto. He got a terrific start and got second and rode, held off Hunter, rode amazing. In the second moto, he didn't get the start and he didn't ride great. He got eighth. I know this is odd, but that's what happened. So I don't know.
Happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it is a positive. If you finish second in a moto in a 450 class, has he ever got second before? I know he's got some thirds.
No, he had not.
Yeah.
No?
So Good job. Good job for Justin Cooper, but he is very start dependent. We've said this over and over. He can go the pace as fast as you want in qualifying, as fast as you want with a clear track, but the other stuff, not so much.
I mean,
go ahead.
You become what you repeatedly do. It's that simple. If you're Michael Rocco and you get really bad starts, but you can go really fast, guess what you get good at? Passing and charging late in the moto. If you're Justin Cooper and you hole shot all the time, or you're Michael Lessie and you hole shot all the time, guess what you're really good at? Racing from the front, riding defensively, knowing how to keep people behind you, and having a lot of confidence to know what to do with a good start. Like, it to me, it's really, really straightforward. And the inverse is also true for Justin Cooper. He doesn't really have a lot of experience starting 12th, so he hasn't developed this hard charge, I can pass anybody anywhere style. That's just not him.
I was surprised that Coop caught him and dropped him. Like, Webb pulled away pretty good, and Webb after the race told me he'd ridden 5 times outdoors, and based on Justin Cooper getting second, that level of speed, I wouldn't expect Cooper Webb to pass him and then absolutely pull away big time. So that was a little surprising. Like, if you told me, like, hey, he started 7th and he stayed 7th or 6th or whatever the whole moto, and I didn't expect him to get dropped by Cooper Webb, but it's still a positive day for Justin Cooper, I think. Jorge Prado.
Clearly Yamaha should fire those guys.
Yeah. Well,
and sign Webb, Eli, baby.
Hey, Webb told me after the race, man, yeah, like, I'm just trying to have fun and embrace this. They got Eli Tomac and Justin Cooper. I don't need to. I'm like, fair point, Coop. Very honest and very fair. Coop
I'm
was basically
still
like,
here for this Cooper Webb summer of basically, yeah. I'm equating it to like some people race dirt bikes and motocross for fun on weekends. That's just what they do as a hobby, right?
Yeah.
It's not their main source of income. There's no pressure. They do it because they want to. That seems to be the Cooper Webb vibe. I'm just going to show up, probably going to barbecue Friday and Saturday at his rig with his family, and we're just going to have a good time.
Yep,
I
agree.
No pressure or expectations. He's just going to do 2 motos and then head back and hang out with the fam.
He said he's going to embrace the fun. Yeah, embrace the fun of it.
Can anybody ask him what he's going to do about his thumb?
Oh,
it's good. It's healed
to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's fine. Like, fine. We're totally good.
Yep.
It's not surgically
healed. I did ask him. He said last year it was 100% torn. Once it's torn, it's done. He said in December or November, whenever it was this time, it was 50%. And they're like, it might heal on its own. It might not. That's why they couldn't decide what should he do. He said, now it's good.
Okay. And he also accused our mutual friend of being TMZ and fake news and going on in the internet radio shows and talking about this thumb needing work.
That would be Phil.
Yeah, it would be Phil. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he said it's fine. It's yep. That's not a problem.
Jorge Prado, 6th place, 7-6. Kind of honest, I'm not on the Prado hype train like I think JT was and some other people. Just because of the newness, the new bike, the way the National is run. I don't think this was bad. It wasn't good. It was a C+.
This is C+ is not good. Like,
That's average. What's average score in school? In Canada, it was a C.
It's very underwhelming for me.
Okay.
Yep.
In Canada, they give you a C. You're just average. I got a lot of C's.
But the expectation is a problem. Like, this is not an average racer. So he was almost a minute behind Jet. He couldn't see the AP battle at all. His resume suggests he should be at least in that battle for 3rd, 4th, 5th. Like, that's what his resume tells us. And he simply wasn't.
The worst thing of his day was getting caught by his teammate late in second moto and getting passed. I was like, wait. Anderson's barely been on the bike. He's not an outdoor warrior. You know, he's had good results here and there, and he caught Prado and dropped him. And I'm whoa.
There's no way this was a C+ for me. This was like a D on any other guy. No problem. It's fine. Like Webb, I think it was like a B+. Like, and they were right near each other, but it's the expectation and what I know he's capable of. This was not a good day.
Weege?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Both things can be true. Obviously, he's got a lot of newness stacked up, and I don't want to certainly react to one freaking race. That seems crazy. But, yeah, JT, I think that's the point you've been making for months now. When is he a minute off the pace ever in his life?
I mean, you cannot get passed by Anderson. You cannot.
No.
Cannot get passed by Anderson.
Yeah. And make no mistake, if you put a lie detector test to Jorge Prado, you don't even need to, actually. He would just tell – if he said, do you think you could beat Jet Lawrence in motocross, he would say, yes, I can. So we did not see any signs of that here. It is one race. You should not overreact to any one race, especially the first one with all the change. But, yeah.
Well,
No, I'm not panic button. I'm just saying this was not a good day. That's as far as I'm going. That day, only – if you look at it just as it was, what is expected of him and what we know, we've seen it. I've watched it in person a lot. That was not a good day for a rider I've seen perform much, much, much better than that.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. Prado's standard is, if I'm not going 1-1, this is a disappointing day. I should. Yeah. I am here to win races. That wasn't even close to that. Obviously, there's a million asterisks.
Yeah. I'm more furthering your point of, I don't think everything is lost. You know, I'm just looking at this day in particular, and we'll judge it again next weekend. We're just week to week right now.
And I will say, we have seen openers where guys are horrifically bad, and within 2 or 3 weeks, I mean, I swear there's probably sound bites on this podcast where, dude, Rider X was 54 seconds behind. How are you going to make up 54 seconds? And literally by round two, they've done it, especially outdoors round one.
And Paula's a weird track, although he'd been riding there. He's been riding there, so there was that. But
I actually talked to AP after we were waiting for the, you know, all the stuff to go on before I interviewed him, and I'm like, I am so thankful that I never had to race here. Like, this wasn't a staple of my career, because I would have hated every second of it, and I would have also been even worse than I already was. He's like, it's no different for us, man. We just don't have a choice. Like, and I'm like, all right, as long as you guys don't think this place is awesome, and like, he's like, no, it's really sketchy, really scary. What are we supposed to do?
Speaking of Webb, in my interview, he's like, dude, I was battling the two-time world champ. Like, I was two-time world champ. I was battling him. Like, this is where he's at. Yeah. Prado, sixth place. Anderson, seventh, 9.5 on the day for him. Good second moto for Anderson. Like, he showed some grit there. So you like to see that. Savacci, 8.10. Definitely, I spent about 14 seconds talking about Joey Savacci and all of the preview shows that I did, if you add them up together. So that is a pretty good finish, considering the 14 seconds I spent talking about Joey. Now, he hit his finger in the first qualifying session on the light that sticks up before the finish, kind of tell people about not to jump, and he broke it, and it's disgusting. So knowing that, he didn't tape them together or anything. He didn't want to do that because it would affect his clutch. Broken finger and all, 8.10 for Savacci. Yeah, he'll take
it. Check out his Instagram if you want to see it.
Yeah, it's disgusting. RJ, 6.12. RJ, just
incredible.
Unbelievable.
Yep. Was he
going to not, if I didn't press him, Weej, at the press conference, was he just never going to tell anybody he had wrist surgery?
I don't know, man. It's mystified. You would think he's done so much crazy stuff at this point that we could wrap our heads around it. But every week, I mean, this is the second consecutive race where I'm like, I don't know, man. It's RJ, It's RJ.
He did a moto. He had surgery last week, and he rode moto on Tuesday for the first time, like 2 days after surgery. And Nathan Ramsey told me he got a plate taken out. And so I said, oh, yeah, you got a plate taken out. He goes, no, bro, they took out the whole little bone, the little navicular round thing. They took it all out. Because it was mush. It was like there was nothing there anymore. I'm like, they took the bone out? And he's like, yeah. And so that's gone. And the plate is gone as well. And like, he's going to need wrist surgery down the road, like a fusion of some sort, like A-Ray's got and a few other guys. That'll probably happen when he's done racing. But for now, yeah, he said it gets fatigued. He's running some tape on it. And he's like, I'm racing. That's what I'm doing. I told my team I was going to race. And I'm like, why don't you just wait till like round 3 or 4? No. No, I'm going to race. Okay, man. Cool, well, RJ.
So for people that didn't watch the press conference, I knew he had this surgery. And I'm like, on this very show, we were talking like our preview shows on Racer X. I was like, I don't know if he's racing or not. Like, I can't get a straight answer. I don't think he is, because I knew this surgery had happened. And it's not my place to break medical news about him. And then I hear he's racing, and I'm like, okay. And this is at the press conference. I'm like, so what's going on here? Like, you are racing a 450, but I also know some things. And he's like, well, this was always the plan. And I was going to race a 450. It was always, you know, like, it's not a shock. Oh yeah. Well, I had surgery also. I had surgery 10 days ago. And I'm like, wait, you're just not going to, can we lean into that a little bit more? Because that's what I'm talking about. I just needed you to say it. And he's just like, no, we're good. Well, I'm just like, holy cow.
And I don't know why I asked Nate in the manager's tower. He goes, yeah, he had a plate taken out, which, I mean, that's a surgery, quote unquote, but that's not really a surgery. It's not that big of a deal to get a plate taken out. You just, you know, they unscrew it and because something's healed, and then they stitch you up. That's a surgery, yes, but it's not a surgery. And then RJ's like, no, man, they took this bone out of my wrist. And now my wrist is missing this support bone, and I'm going to just have to deal with it. And I'm like, there we go. Thank you,
RJ. I don't care what they did. If you go in and have surgery on your wrist and you race the next weekend, it's notable. That's the whole thing I'm getting at. Nobody even talked about it. He didn't talk about it. It should have been this huge storyline. Is like, this guy's racing. We didn't know that he had. Yeah. It's fine.
Crash, he beats Prado and Anderson. First ride, first moto, first deal. I'm just going to run sixth, which is really impressive.
Great.
Yeah,
rode great.
Crash in the second moto.
It's so RJ. It is. Didn't he 3 years ago at Thunder Valley, or Hangtown, got a stake through the heart?
Yeah, he's a vampire.
Yeah. And then he was mad. He wanted to check himself out of the hospital and then just go ride Thunder Valley. They made him wait till High Point. They gave him like a full, 13 days.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's something else. And actually, the post-race interview I did with him, I got into it with Salt Lake too. And he was pretty honest about the whole Salt Lake thing with Hammacher and all of that as well. So check that out if you can. I told him, I said, hey, man, I didn't like what you did there. And we still got into it. It's fine. RJ's awesome. So.
Check out Aaron Hansel did a great interview with him, I think on Tuesday after that race, and his strategy, so to speak. You can hate the move, but there was quite a bit of thought behind it. I encourage you to read that. To sum it up like this, he had just passed Vial, and he's like, I bet you Seth doesn't know I'm right behind him yet. So the very first opening I get, because he's not worried about Vial running in and on, because he knows Tom's not going to do it. So while he thinks Tom is behind him, I'm going for it. So that was why he did what he did.
Pacharel, Hep Suzuki rider, French guy. So I'm talking to him after the race. Marv introduces me to him, and he goes, I know who you are. You're famous. He said, and I'm like, okay, whatever. So we're talking, he knew who I was anyways. So you would think that he knows I'm some top level journalist, right? Cause he,
so you're saying and he I thinks, say, he thinks wrong. Like you thought he well, had a misconception.
Here's what I walked into, and I go to him. So, where'd you race last year? And he goes, MXGP. I'm like, my bad, bro.
You didn't know that?
Dude, I never saw his name in results. I don't remember seeing him at last year at all. Like, he said he had a shit year. Didn't go well. But I'm like, I went to Majora last year. I went to MXGP, and I should know better. I immediately just stepped into it, right away, where he's just like, this fucking idiot doesn't even know.
I raced GPs. It's not fair to you. I was going back and forth with he and his team on signing him.
Yeah.
So it's too close to it to be neutral on it.
He did have a bad year. But anyway, so I just was like, yeah, man, where'd you race last year? Like, I knew he rode Hondas a couple years ago in the GPs. And obviously, mm-hmm. Longtime Yamaha rider. So anyways, funny stuff. But he rode really well. 11-9 on the day. And then Valentin Guillaud from Switzerland, who's been really good the last few years. He's doing the whole series too, and they're battling. And they're out there battling, and I'm like, yep, perfect world order. Here we go. Fantastic. Lewis Phillips probably was only paying attention to that battle. But yeah, these two GP guys, they race each other over there growing up, I guess, and now they're racing again, Pacharel told me. It was pretty funny stuff. Both guys did really well. Guillaud had a stock motor with just a muffler on it, and Pacharel's on a Ep Suzuki, and both guys are here for the whole year, so it's cool to see. Shades of Jose Butron and Roman Pep. These are the new ones.
Pep was out there, too.
Yeah, Pep was not bad either. I did go talk to Guillaud on Friday, and he was, talking about the short program and learning the track and everything else, and he goes, and it's so hot. And I'm like, dude.
Wait till next week.
This is balmy. This is southern. We are – embracing this. So just wait.
Is Lewis going next weekend? Because he better buckle up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, Lewis will be there. Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got heat stroke already, he thinks.
Yeah. Weej, I'm so happy that Guillaume and Petrel rode well, because we kind of talked about this. We were getting the TV crew up to speed. We talked about it on Insider. If they had just been like 28-31, we'd have looked really dumb, because we were like, no, these guys are going to be like legit. There's going to be a lot of people asking who the hell is that on Saturday. Yeah. And yeah, thankfully it went our way.
No, you planted a flag in the ground. You said they would be good. And I think probably 3/4 of people on our TV crew were like, is this dude nuts? But they came through.
We literally said 10th on Thursday's show, I think.
Yeah.
10th place or something for Fourth Pacharel. Like, he'll run around top 10 or something.
Yeah.
And then I asked Savacci, I'm like, because he was on Pacharel. I'm like, did you know anything about that dude? And he's like, oh, yeah, no, I knew who that was. I was like, I was wondering if you were thinking like Suzuki 102. And then Pacharel told me they raced that 80cc Diz Nations thing when Joey was on Suzuki's. Like, yep. whatever year that was.
Really?
Way back when? Yeah. He's like, we raced. He won, and I got 7th or something. So Pacharel knew all about Savacci also. But,
oh, that's cool.
And Weej totally dissed him. Welcome to America, Pacharel. Go F yourself.
Ridiculous.
No. Twisted Tea post-race show.
Oh, no.
Pacharel had some stuff going on with the team, and they were going to get him. Tommy Tenders was going to get him on.
We wanted to interview him. We did. And then he was in a long conversation with the team owner, Dustin Pipe's dad, I think. And Tom's like, I think he's got to go sign some papers or something. And we waited a while, and he was still talking to the team. I'm like, I'm not going to go over there when he's in like a business meeting and be like, hey, we need that interview. So then we just wrapped up the show.
JT, so I'm talking to him with Marv, and he goes, I got to go do this. And he turns around, and they're gone. And you could see the sadness in his face, because Tom had told him, you're going to be on TV. You're going to be on this Twisted Tea show. And he goes, yeah, man, I don't know. He's gone.
But like 20 minutes passed.
Weej will make it up to him. It's fine.
Like, yeah. The amount of time that passed between, hey, we'd like to get you on the show, and we had moved on.
But hold on a second. If there was anybody on this earth that's going to be around the next 20 minutes to make good on this, it's Weej. Like, there is no like, oh, it's I can't wait 20 more minutes at the track. I simply can't do it.
If it was Weed Show and it was myself solo, yes. Oh. But I have a massive crew for this Twisted Tea Best Show.
Right.
Huge crew, which is Tommy Tenders in a camera.
Yep.
And Sophie Phelps as a co-host with Steve.
You're accounting for their time too. I'll
poor Pacharel. The disappointment on his face when the guys were gone. Anyways, good to have both those guys in the series. Cool. Adds to it. Grant Harlan, 12th. Hard Dog needs to go to MXGP. Just go, Hard Dog. Like, tough Supercross season for him, right? Yeah, like, he made some mains.
Erne went really well. He should definitely go back to
I mean, give him a chance. Hard Dog, 14-11 on the day. So, good job. He just did what Grant Harlan does.
Do you think there are a plethora of MXGP rides for Grant to jump on and make some money?
Weej, this is so JT. Like, I just make a comment, the guy's better at motocross, he should go to GP, like, ha ha ha, and now JT is breaking down an Erne MXDN ride, and then whether or not Harlan can make money at GP, like, he's breaking this down, and I'm just an offhanded comment about Harlan being better in moto.
No, because somebody would go, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, why wouldn't Harlan go race GPs and just race motocross? Like, someone out there is thinking that.
All right. Web 13, 37.7. I blamed Alex for his DNF. Coolant. Lost all his coolant. Web did say it was sketchy, though. He was jumping with his front end high once he heard the ticking noise going on in the motor. Derek Drake. I have shit on Derek Drake a lot. Fantasy purposes, mostly, because he's really fast and he can't pull together. And he's wearing Fly Racing, by the way. And he's on Bar X. Good job, Derek Drake. He dug deep. Both motos, he was catching guys. It was the everything that I've wanted to see in Derek Drake that I've never really seen before. He's always been talented. He's always been fast. So I want to make this time to credit Derek Drake, because I've shit on Derek Drake a lot.
He can ride a motorcycle, man. I was watching him practice, because he hasn't raced all year. I think he did some of those Glen Helen like two-stroke races, but I'm just like, dude, who is number 80? He looks great. And I'm like, oh, it's Drake, which is not even surprising, actually. He can ride really well.
Yep. Malcolm Stewart. Which
is what you're making. Yeah.
Yeah. Malcolm crashed Moto 1, got up, crashed by the rollers, got up, got 12. Second moto, went down again. I forget who told me in the post race, Harlan, that he was just laying underneath his bike, just in a corner for a while. So Mookie DNF, second moto. Colt Nichols also crashed out, second moto, 13:40 for Colt Nichols. And I broke down. I went to talk to Nichols when I was talking to DV, David Villeman. Nichols told me he has done 3 nationals in 3 years. So, Yeah, this is his fourth. And I don't know who Mason Semmons was, but he's an Australian guy, and good job. That was the guy I had no idea about. He went 18-18 on the day. Did you guys know anything about him?
I saw your tweet. I didn't know then. Still don't know now.
Yep.
Got nothing.
But good job for him, Aussie guy. And that's about it for 450s. Anything else? 450-wise?
Ended up on the rental car shuttle with our guy Harry Kulas and his wife. And their,
oh, shocker.
And their six-month-old baby. But he's seen him a lot because he moved to Club MX. He's staying on the West Coast here for a week or two, but he'll be back. And, you know, if you're going to move to Club MX and you need to know where to live, what to do, how to handle your business, you know who you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Phil.
Yep. Butterfly.
Yeah. And, Steve, we had some live insight to a live watching party.
Yeah.
On Saturday.
Yeah, it looks like our guy Phil is really getting prepped for his Canadian National Series that kicks off next weekend. Literally,
yeah, chilling at the pool party at Brayton's house.
Yeah, eating, drinking, 7 days to go before the Canadian kickoff.
No. I got confirmation.
Oh.
He did not drink.
Oh, okay.
Margaritas were served, and he said no thank you. So good on you, Phil.
Okay, I assume because I saw everyone else drinking at the pool party at JB's house that Phil was in it. So,
but JB said of the entire day, 80 guys in 2 sets of motos, both classes, the only guys Phil cared about at all were Kulas and Marchbanks. It's all he's interested in right now. Those are his guys.
Right. What about J-Mart? We'll get into that. Maybe he already wrote J-Mart off. All right. Thank you to Fly Racing, flyracing.com, Pulp MX code to save. Motorsport as well. Go through the banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Motorsport.com, OEM and aftermarket parts, whether it's Fly Racing or Renthal or anything else, motorsport.com can help you out. Thank you to those guys. And they got their ultimate ride sweepstakes going on right now. Grand prize, a YZ450F Blue Crew guys. So thank you to motorsport.com, Renthal as well. And of course, Fly Racing. Brunt Boots, of course. Our guy Aaron Hansel was there this weekend with his Brunt Boots. You know who else wears Brunt Boots? I'm a big fan of them.
Mm.
Pedro.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a huge Brunt Boot guy. Yeah. Huge Brunt. What is Pedro's real name? I just learned it this year and now I forgot.
What?
What's his real name?
I don't know.
Richard Sterling.
That's it. Yeah.
Who knew? No one knew.
And he was named Pedro and he worked for J-Mart forever. Brunt Boots, code PULPMX to save. Please check them out. They don't just make a durable work boot. They reinvented comfort for the hardest workers out there. That's why I don't wear Brunt Boots, because I don't work that hard. But if I did, like Hansel, and build corn boards, I would wear Brunt Boots. PULPMX, code to save with Brunt Boots. Great company. Pedro uses them. Aaron Hansel uses them. Rod Bell uses them. There's another man that's a real worker. Rod Bell loves Brunt Boots. Yep.
Rod Bell stopped by the house again on Thursday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, more tune-ups.
More tune-ups?
Oh, yeah. Great guy. Love Free? Rod Bell.
Free?
We gave him some cash.
Oh, okay. Okay.
For IRS purposes, I don't want to discuss, but yes.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Love Rod Bell. All right. Okay. 250 class. Deegs was a heavy favorite coming in, and he did nothing to dissuade anybody that he was not the heavy favorite in this title chase. He rode great. He got top 5 starts and just worked those guys slowly and pulled away. Now, if Hymus hadn't crashed Moto 1, that might have got a little interesting, but Deegs is the man, and good job. Crushed it.
I want to say you're right, but, man, Deegs was so good late in those motos.
Yep.
I don't know that it would have been any different. Maybe the gap's a little closer, but Deegs just has too much in the second half of the motos right now.
I was made a joke on Twitter, like, who's going to be cooked? Because we all know how Deegs works. Maybe no one. Maybe there'll be no cooked messages.
If he gets two starts like that,
Yeah.
If he like just top 7, 8, 10, it's going to be a long summer for everybody else.
Weej?
Yeah, I think that's what we've all realized. The trash talk only comes to cut people down who he thinks are building confidence. If they're not building any confidence, he doesn't need to do it.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
They're not right now.
Yeah, great job for Deegs. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, I thought he wrote.
He was as advertised. Like, this is who we thought he was going to be.
But Joe Shmoda, and don't think Lars didn't throw a little jab at me about Joe's 2-2 ride and Joe starting off slow and all you guys, you know, all that.
I love that Joe is as surprised as anyone on the podium. Like, he did not like see this coming as like a no brainer. Like, he was like, this super good. I'm really happy. Like, he was genuinely surprised that he was that solid.
He didn't like, I mean, look, he went 2-2. So that, but he didn't like really impress me as far as like his raw speed or his
endurance.
Really? He looked great. He just rode steady and picked those guys off. Like, they made mistakes or they got tired and he just slowly slipped through. It was really impressive, but not in any sort of like, holy shit, look at Shmoda way, you know?
I was thoroughly impressed. I mean, he's the only person late that could keep Hayden honest at all, like even a little bit.
Yeah
I agree. Second moto was especially, I didn't see where he passed Hymus and Bomer or Vial too in the first moto. That was all good, but he was giving Hayden quite a bit. Now obviously Hayden had more in the tank because when he needed to check out he did, but
he
wasn't playing with him.
I thought Shmoda was going to get frisky there for a minute, but
he was going for it.
But, it was a really good job for Joe Shmoda.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep. Starting the season strong, as he does.
Here we go.
Anaheim 1.
Expect anything else.
Yep.
Stay away from the pit boards, Joe. Stay away from the pit boards.
You know what's funny? Who's the only guy who really got aggressive with Deegan on the track this year?
Yeah, Joe.
So. Bomer.
Bomer did. Yeah, I mean, Bomer did a little bit.
He got in him a little bit.
Yeah. That Seattle race, Joe has given him like 3-4 corners in a row. What I'm saying is, I feel like the zebra has changed its stripes. Joe is now a assassin on the track, a block pass assassin, and starts the series strong. That's what he does.
I know we're not allowed to call, we need to be careful with this, but like, you know, there was a nickname of Sushi, which I don't believe is derogatory in any way. Like, I'm actually going to go have sushi right after the show. But in that vein, he would be like he's like a spicy roll right now. Like, he is spicy Joe right now. A lot of jalapeno.
JT's canceled.
There's nothing wrong with that name. Like, I get it. We can't say it, but
it's literally everybody called Japanese food. I don't know. He's a Japanese person.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's fine.
Bail us out, Steve.
What?
Bail us out. Move us to another topic, please.
VL 4-3. A good day. I thought I was surprised that Bomer got him second moto and then kind of got away from him. Like if you're Tom and you want to win this national championship and you have the lead and you've won motos and overalls, I was surprised. Bomer is good at that stuff, but, you know.
He said he wasn't happy on the podium. I asked him, are you satisfied with the podium here, the opener, to get started? And he's like, no, no, not at all. So that tells you all you need to know about that, your point there.
Hymus was good. We talked about him riding moto and not riding supercross for the last little while and throwing the towel in on that. I was confused, though, typical rider speak. He gets top qualifier. And on the podium, he says, I really got to thank my team, man. We threw the kitchen sink at the setup, and you know, obviously it worked. I got top qualifier time. And I'm like, okay. And then afterwards, the day I'm talking to him in the post-race, and I'm like, he's like, man, my bike's not where it needs to be. You know, like, I got to get better. The bike's got to be better. It's a new bike, and we're working on it. And I'm like, but you were fast qualifier. Like, did you leave that suspension on that got you fast qualifier? And he was like, yeah, but it was beating me up. And I knew it was going to be tough, and I'm like, but
those hero laps are such a misnomer. Like, just because you can go crazy for one lap, that doesn't mean that you can sustain that, right? Like, he came in, and if you watch the video back, he's doing like this because he had massive arm pump. he wasn't comfortable going that fast. So I kind of, in rider speak, understand what he's saying. Just because I can like ride through it doesn't mean that the bike was doing what I want.
Well, that's what he was saying. He's like, when I was leading, I knew that it was beating me up and I wasn't going to, you know, be able to stay there. And I was just like, okay, all right. You know, generally when you lead fast qualifiers and you lead laps, he was ripping. He was ripping early on. It was great.
He's having to override the situation, which is, you know, that's what I hear when he says that.
Second moto, garbage start. He was buried and worked pretty well to come up, but, you know, to sixth. 250s are tough to do when you don't get starts, for sure. All right, so Jaimes 3-6, still a good day, I think, for Jaimes, qualifying and leading and, that's, you know, fun. All I of think that.
The second moto was a little bit of a letdown points-wise, because now you look up and you're, yeah, I don't know,
14
points down or whatever. What is it, 20 points?
14.
14, yeah. It's not as bad as I thought, but still, you look up and you're 14 down already and you want to win the title. Like, it's a little daunting with that for me.
Bomer 5-4. Like last year, he was a 5-10 guy and now he's 5-4. So he looks like he stepped up also, you know, but this is more his style of track. Paula Hangtown will be good too, for him. So we'll see going east how he does.
Yeah, I think that's the question. It was definitely better. He was probably better than people remember last year. But as we know, when you're getting like seventh, eighth, people don't notice. He wasn't bad by any means. This is definitely better.
Yeah.
But I guess we have to see if it's a track dependent thing or if he's just permanently at a higher level.
Yeah. High Point, Southwick. I want to see it there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Marchbanks was good. Marchbanks was really good. 6-5. Charging hard. You know, he didn't get a great start. Imagine that in Moto 1. Moto 2, he did. He was really good. His fitness was good. All of it. I told him he looks skinnier after the Mose. Yeah. He said, people are telling me that, but I'm not any lighter. And I'm like, okay, all right.
I mean, the starts are going to be, I think it's going to come down to the starts, right? If he gets the starts, he'll be top 10 all year and be up there at times better than that, 5-3. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't get the starts, it's going to be a lot of 16th to 7th type day.
Well, I was funny you say that because I was talking to Mitch Payton before the first moto and we were talking about his riders. I said, hey, Marchbanks qualified really well. And he's like, yep, it's good. He goes, bikes are good or whatever. And I said, yeah, just he's probably going to go like 16th to 7th today in the first moto because he's going to get a bad start and he's going to ride really good, but he's going to get 7th. And Mitch is like, yep. And then I saw him in the second moto. I said, see? And Mitch is like, he got 6th. And I'm like, okay, sorry, man. Sorry. I was one off.
Hammaker crap.
Yeah, he did. He was maybe the biggest surprise in 250s in a positive way. Probably. Maybe
I talked to him a lot at the end of Supercross. I knew he was really prepared for outdoors. So I kind of wasn't surprised, but only because I had some intel that he had been riding a lot of outdoors.
I would give that award to Bomer. Not that it matters. But.
That's fair.
Hammaker crashed second. First moto, Hammaker went down while he was up there. 8-7 on the day for him. Mosman was the quietest guy that I never really noticed. You know, like I didn't watch Mosman. He went 11-8 on the day. Good job. Mosman also.
He's very, very, very good at Hangtown. Yep. Just heads and, up. Just be prepared to be like, holy hell, Mosman's going fast. That's, I don't know if he's going to sustain it.
Yep.
But he's going to be fast at some point.
Darren Lawrence told me also that just out of the blue, Michael Mosman stopped him and said, hey, man. I just want to say, like, I know, you know, me and your kids have gotten into it on the track over the years, but I really respect you and the family and the kids, and I always enjoy listening to you talk. And Darren Lawrence is like, all right. And that's, I'm cool. Like, that's so Michael Mosman, though.
That is so Mosman, though. Yeah.
That's so Mosman right there.
I like that, though. That's,
yeah, yeah.
Like, he didn't have to do that.
No.
I think that's a classy thing to do.
Voland. Top club rider, 12-10 on the day. Maximus Volan. He was good. I should look back at the laps. I he moved up both motos. He was good that way. I also liked that.
Honestly,
he was launching the after the first turn. He was launching that roller off the roller onto the next roller going up the hill. More consistently than other guys.
I think at RDL at one point we just like, well, there's Volan down. Like we're not even watching. Like not with the. What we were watching was not Voland at all, and he's just like rolling around on the ground. He's like, "Oh, yeah,
there was a little bit of that."
Voland,
Weege level of stoke when Ty Masterpool up the first moto of the year. Ooh. The first moto of the year.
Oh, he's starting to bubble up. I bet.
Pulls that big double.
You know, guys, I had been backing way down on this. I had done everything I could to stay away from the punch bowl. I'm not even cracking one beer. You know, I know one, I just start getting carried away. But it was very difficult because that second turn leap or the double slingshot move, that was spicy. But I'm glad I tempered my expectations because it wasn't that good after that.
He used that crown molding.
He used the crown molding too.
He used that crown molding.
Seventh, that was a sweet move.
Yeah, it was. Seventh, though, not great. And then second moto, he was looked tired. So not a good day for Masterpool, but we had two laps of greatness.
And that's why I temper my expectations. I'm starting to realize that this is what you get. He has it, but I'm starting to realize you're only going to see it sporadically.
Championships are
Is a bit of a problem.
Championships are really hard to win.
I had heard that he had a contract for next year, and then I heard he didn't, and I was kind of asking around a little bit, and it turns out it's Pro Circuit's option for a deal next year. That's what I was told from someone that would know. So
he's got to kill it.
He's got to kill it to get picked up by Mitch Payton.
Yeah.
Drew Adams, 914. Good job for Drew. Way back in Moto2 after a fall, like 25th or something. I had him in fantasy, so I was really watching him. Really rode well. Looks in shape, everything else. Drew Adams was good job. Ninth in the first moto, solid. Like, that's,
He's doing exactly what he's supposed to do.
Yep. Cochran, 14-11. That's the first time he's raced all year, right? He never made a Supercross, correct?
Nope.
Right, so that's 14-11 for him. Good job for that. Ryder D, I was let down, although he had a really creative cheater line coming after the finish that I'm surprised didn't get him in more trouble. He was just hanging a left and going on the side of the jump. By the way, did you guys notice? I tweeted this out. Acerbi's track markers are gone. It is now UFO.
Yeah, UFO. It's been all season. I know we don't have markers, but it's been UFO all season. And it continues now.
What do you mean all season?
They've been a big sponsor.
Oh.
Yeah.
But in Supercross, we don't have track markers, right?
I understand. But I'm just saying UFO has been a big sponsor, so there was zero chance it was going to be a Cherubis track markers out there.
The plastic wars continue. I'm here for it. UFO is now making the track workers stakes.
I was told something I had not known for 30 years.
Oh.
It's UFO. It's officially... Yeah. UFO.
Hold on, I told you weren't you had to have been on the call or in a meeting. I brought this up in a call or a meeting. I said everywhere on Earth they call this UFO.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we need to stick by that on the show because I think it was an A1 when we had to do the UFO moment of the race, or pass of the race, or whatever it is. And the official was like, "Nope, we're going UFO." I was like, "Okay, I'll stay out of it." Like I just know it's UFO everywhere else. So
yeah. Yeah, so oddly, I was told on Saturday morning, if you're referring to these track markers, it is UFO.
Yeah.
And I'm like, their logo is literally an alien. And what do aliens use?
UFOs.
UFOs.
Yeah. Well, but the funny
they want to be UFO.
Well, the funny part of Weege is, so UFO, yes. UFO is probably what most people would say. In Europe, they don't even say UFO, it's UFO. So like... Make of that whatever you will, but yeah.
What did they call Stu in Paris, Steve?
Booba.
Booba.
Yeah.
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 Booba.
Ryder D. So Ryder D, not a great day, 17-9. Parker Ross was good. Parker Ross was moving up. He went from SLR Honda to Bar-X Yamaha, I believe, for the outdoors, and Parker Ross was really good. I was impressed by him. Him and Derek Drake, both on Bar-X. I thought both guys were like underrated chargers in both Parker, all four motos.
Yeah. Both Parker and his girlfriend KK had great weekends.
Yeah. So JT, you revealed this to me that, Michaela Nielsen, KK, who won the WMX on Friday, she's dating Parker Ross.
Yes.
So now Parker Ross has moved from SLR Honda to Bar-X Yamaha. But a couple weeks ago when he was still on that team, they were teammates and dating.
Yes.
Is that a first? That has to be a first.
It has to be. Outside of like a Disney movie, I think it's a first.
Oh, man. Workplace. Is that allowed in the workplace? Were they okay with this or they have to do it secretly?
I don't think SLR Honda has a HR department.
Okay.
But he certainly would be a concern elsewhere.
Good job, Parker Ross. Mikhail Harrop was, yeah, not as good as we thought. Didn't get good starts from what I could see, and fell both motos, I think. And, you know, not big ones, but I think he did 245 at one time I saw, so probably fell that one.
I watched a practice start in the morning when they do start practice, and I was like, we are in big trouble.
Yeah. I talked to an ex-Triumph rider who shall go nameless, but he didn't finish the season last year with the team. And he rides 450s now. And he told me starts are a problem on those bikes. They need some ponies.
Yeah.
So.
Not a good weekend overall for the
team. No. The Triumph PR man. Can you imagine his job?
Oh.
Can you imagine? Like the problems that gentleman had?
Yeah. I'll be excited to read it.
Levi Kitchen, not good. Not good for the chef. Chain fell off second moto. Not his fault, but he wasn't like he was crushing
it. Good. Nothing was good before then anyway.
Nothing was good. Nothing. 10th place in Moto 1. The chef back from an injury. Tough deal for him. You know, he got 12 points.
Yeah.
Hayden Deegan got 50.
This was very reminiscent of Justin Cooper in 2022.
Yeah.
Just a horrific opening round.
Dylan Schwartz, 24-13. Timmerman had to go to the LCQ, amateur kid, had to go to the LCQ and was 45th or something in practice times. Went to the LCQ, got in that way, and then scored points, 18-17 on the day. So, like, what a rebound from Enzo Timmerman. Yeah.
During press day, Stu and I were standing on the side of a tabletop watching, and he was so stoked that James Stewart was watching him that he was doing, like, whips and points and, like, yelling. Because he was so excited that, like, he'd arrived. James Stewart was watching him. It's
that's
great.
Cool. Jordan Smith did tweet out that he was battling a race winner and a two-time national champion. So Jordan's day was, I guess, happy. He crashed second moto.
Sometimes it goes that way, man.
Yeah.
You're like, how the hell are we? I've been in that spot. I was nowhere near as good as Jordan is. But I know what it feels like to be, like, 18th and be like, the guy in front of me and behind me have both won 250 races and championships. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. Like, I don't feel like I'm supposed to be better than this, but the resumes wouldn't say so.
And J-Mart.
Time to talk about that.
Oh, UPS.
Are we okay?
Is UPS hiring? No, listen, I talked to him. I texted with him this morning. I'm here for the J-Mart story. I love this. I hope it goes better than what it did. He crashed first lap with Faulkner in the first moto and was dead last and came up to 20th. Second moto, not a good start either. Came back to 20th. He got caught behind a bike in the opening laps and was way back. I was looking at some lap times. He had 11th place lap times-ish. If everything goes well, and that would have been fine. Like, if J-Mark goes 10-11 or 11-11, we're, like, fine with that, right?
Yep.
So that's kind of where his lap times were. Still didn't move up very good. He's not good at Paula anyways. He told me he needs to work on his race craft and the race day itself. But, yes, J-Mark, let's slow the hype down a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I was paying way too much attention to it since it wasn't like he was in the battle at all. But I was glancing at timing and scoring quite a bit throughout the day to be like, I wonder where J-Mart is. And every time I was like, oh, no. Like, I'm really glad to hear he's in a good place, you're saying.
Glad to hear he seemed like he's fine. Like, it was garbage weekend, but it's not, you know. Yeah.
When I kept seeing 22nd, 21st, and not really moving up.
Yeah.
I was genuinely concerned that he was going to be like, well, I tried.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll adjourn the J-Mart court to next week and see how that goes. By the way, Motorsport, Renthal, Fly Racing, and Weege, Brunt Boots, and Onyx Maps.
Yes, Onyx Maps. If you ride mountain bikes or run like the... hold on, I got a call coming in here.
Did I tell you I'm running now?
No.
I'm running now.
I thought you had, like, torn ACL and...
Yeah, I got a bad ACL, but so... Troll Train came to the house and told me I should run because he said running can get if you bike for an hour, you can get the same effect running in 30 minutes. So I like that. I thought that was really good. That was always something that people said. So Weege, you're going to like this. Because I'm into running, before I attempted one run, I went and bought a pair of $260 Nike Vaporflies, which are the latest thing that's breaking marathon records. They have a carbon insole that like is convex, and then it springs down and it basically runs by itself.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it basically runs by itself. So I have, yeah. So I have these shoes. I've ran once. I will continue to run, but I know you'd be stoked with the purchase.
I use the Hoka brand for running, which are very expensive, but I figured out a hack on that. You can find sites that will sell you used ones, like ones that people tried and returned. So that's where I am with my running shoe budget.
These shoes are so light and so spongy, and they're phenomenal. And I got a pair, and I'm running.
I'm impressed that you're running. Well, my point here was if Onyx Maps, if you're a Martin brother that runs like Alex or cycles like Jeremy, you could find places to do it. You could do trail running, mountain biking, because they have trails for everything, hiking, and of course for dirt bikes, single track, adventure bikes, dual sport bikes, enduro bikes. Find where to ride. Go to onxmaps.com or Onyx Off Road in the App Store. It's way better than using Google Maps, which doesn't even usually mark this stuff. And then here you can get details left by other riders about where to go, what to do, and what it's going to be like. Really cool.
So I ran once, and the next day I was so sore. For 2 days I was so sore using all these muscles that I've never used. And I ran an 11-minute mile, and I ran for 25 minutes without stopping. So I was,
so you did 2 miles.
So now I Googled what a 5K was, and that's 3.1. My next run, which will be tomorrow, will be a 5K.
I respect Troll Train's training knowledge, but don't you have like your biggest race of the year coming up this weekend?
Yes.
Your regional?
Yeah.
Should you be trying an entirely new training thing that you've never done in your life or haven't done in 30 years and getting sore and then doubling the distance 5 days before you race?
I never thought of this.
Okay.
Probably a good idea. Probably not a good idea. Maybe I'll wait till running.
Speaking of needing to run, we got to hurry up.
All right. So both of you look like, once again, you guys look like complete morons because you both were so hard on the Fedortsov train. I couldn't believe the hype coming off of you guys for the Fedortsov train.
And what was the results?
22:19.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you mean?
He beat J-Mart.
But no, he actually didn't beat J-Mart. He got one less. But one less point than J-Mart on the day.
He got 19th. J-Mart got 20th. He beat two-time national champ, one of the greatest ever.
You guys were saying he was balls fast at club.
I didn't say that. I've never seen him ride outdoors in my life.
But JT, you said the hype was real. You've heard about this.
Yeah,
speed.
I said I thought he'd be top 20. That's it. I picked him on fantasy. Like he
and Volin
19. What's wrong?
And Volin was way better.
Max Volin has been racing pro for four years.
I know, but you guys were so hyped. And like 22:19 is fine. I'm not no hate comms.
If you asked me if he was going to beat Volin, I would have said, of course not.
While Weege was saying it.
It's only round one. I just said at some point we will see some of this speed.
He was fine. Just you guys.
Totally fine.
But you guys were very hyped on him. And so I'm just saying. All right.
I was not saying anything about Volin.
I was hyping it up big time. I was.
There's bad days, and then there's Austin Faulkner once again, who crashes Moto One, gets landed on. His bike's garbage because it gets landed on. And then second Moto, he gets the first place out of points, 22. So not good for Faulkner. Yeah. That's 250 class. Anything else on that?
It's become one of our longest episodes ever.
Well, it's a lot to talk about.
It is. It's round one, and we knew there would be a lot of stories.
Yes, it was a great race. That second moto of 450s was really cool. That was awesome to watch that. That was great.
Hope we get a lot more of that.
The old man and the kid going at it.
Oh, and the fans are losing their mind. And then we know there are tracks that are even crazier fan-wise than this one, so if this keeps up.
Yep.
Pretty much all of them.
Awesome. Good to watch that. And this weekend, Hangtown, I won't be there, but I will be following it along on my phone. I will be racing the regional. So
hard time as usual.
Supposed to be very hot. Very hot. Everyone was already talking about it this week, Weej, which I know you love that. But I heard it from three or four people at Paula about how hot Hangtown was going to be 7 days later.
I mean, when people say it's going to be hot, that's usually going to happen.
I don't push back against the heat prediction 7 days in advance because it's a thing called summer. So generally that pans out.
Okay.
Well, we're going to miss the heat by 2 hours. Like rain.
Yes. That's rain and heat are not. Yes, exactly. It's not the same metric.
All right.
We got a heat front rolling in and it's going to break in 2 hours.
Well, you guys are going to get a heat front this weekend and I'll be at Paula once again. All right.
Hating your life.
Yeah, probably. I'm already thinking this is a bad idea after racing amateur day, but I can't
JT,
bail.
Did you see this weekend? This is the setup, folks, in the paddock. There's a starting gate. Behind the starting gate, this is the Primus Real Estate, is the TV compound we work out of, the AMA rig, and the press tent, and the Alpine Stars trailer, and Steve's pickup with his bike.
Yep. The big 762.
Yep.
Yep.
This
real estate only can be used by the officials, the TV, the press, the medics, and Steve.
Yep. You guys wonder why I say, like, he's holding court in the press box and this preferential treatment. This was just another...
I was driving home after the race. I asked someone important, like, hey, can I pull into the pits? Because I'm going to have my bike and my gear bag and all my stuff. I didn't want to get stolen. Can I pull into the pits on Saturday and, you know, leave after the race to drive home to Vegas? And they said, sure. And they told me where to park. And it was not where I parked there. It was away from there, more unseen. But when I drove in Saturday morning, I was a little late. Starbucks and stuff, and the riders meeting was going on, and I would have had to plow through all the riders to park in the spot that I was supposed to park in. And I'm like, what do I do? Like, I was like, I can't just like, I drive through the middle of riders meeting. So I was like, well, screw it. I'll pull right in here. And then I was like, I'll move it after riders meeting. And then literally kind of forgot. And then it was full of people. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm just staying there. So it wasn't a look at me move. I just didn't get there early enough to pull in where I was supposed to park.
It got looked at a lot.
It did, yeah. All right. Good times. All right, thank you to Fly Racing, Renthal, Motorsport, Racetech, of course, Fly Racing, Brunt Boots, OnX Maps, all of that. Thank you, people, for watching and listening. Appreciate it, Anton, as well, for editing this damn thing. Appreciate that as well. And Weej, JT, thanks, boys.
See you.
Bye.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Motorsport.com, Renthal, and RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners.